God with us. It was our hope in ages past that we might be reconciled to our God, and that from Him there might be extended a way for all men to be saved. That has occurred. Emmanuel has come. He is with us. Last Sunday I spoke of how God sent Himself to live among us, how He did it. And He did it by an incarnation. He did it by the virgin birth, so that His Son would not have the same sinful nature as we who are born of the flesh possess. He was born and He was named Jesus, for He shall save His people from their sins. God sent His Son to us in a unique way so that He might experience that which all human beings experience, and yet without sin. This morning we're going to look how He came to live among us. That is, some brief facts from the life of Jesus Christ. He was born to live among us. And this He did according to Peter's sermon at Pentecost, recorded in the book of Acts, chapter 2. And verse 22. Peter preached these words: "Ye men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God among you by miracles and wonders and signs, which God did by Him in the midst of you, as you yourselves also know." You'll notice the statement, "a man approved of God among you." The word "approved" means to lift up and show, to show forth, to make public, to declare holy. So Peter established the fact that God had sent His Son and He was totally and wholly revealed to mankind by miracles, wonders, and signs. This is how God lived among us. The first word that is used in chapter 22 is the word "miracles." What is a miracle? It is the translation of a word that means power, inherent power. And in regard to the miracles of Christ, as being those things done that would make it known to all those who saw these miracles that He was the Christ of God. Then the word "wonders" is used in Peter's message. It means a supernatural product causing excitement and surprise, always pretending something in the future. And another word that He used is the word "signs," plural. It means a signal, a flag, a sign by which anything is designated. That is, we constantly read signs as we drive along the freeway. Our homes are identified by signs, that is, by numbers and by streets. This is the way this word is used. There were certain incidents that occurred that were signs to the nation of Israel that Jesus was indeed the Christ, the promised one of God. Peter also said that these were done in the midst of you. On one occasion, Paul, in his preaching, spoke to a king and said, "O king, you realize that the things that I am telling you about Jesus were not done in a corner." Jesus didn't come to be mysterious. He didn't come to be secretive. He came to reveal by his presence and by his works and by his life the nature of God Almighty. So we have miracles, wonders, and signs. These were done in the midst of the nation of Israel. I want to point you to the first manifestation of something that occurred in the life of Jesus other than simply the Christmas story as we think of it today. This occurred when he was 12 years old, and it will tell us something of the signs. In fact, when we look at the book of Isaiah, chapter 7 and verse 14, the Bible tells us that the birth that would be born, that would come from a virgin, would be a sign to the nation of Israel. But I think that this particular reading teaches us something of the word wonder. I know there's many overlapping attributes between or including miracles, signs, and wonders, but Peter designated that some of them definitely fell into the category of miracle, the category of wonder, and the category of a sign. I think that this reading about Jesus and his life and what he did when he was just 12 years old falls under the category of a wonder, but it's his first manifestation from his birth of something unique and unusual about him. Luke chapter 2, and we'll begin reading at verse 46. Luke chapter 2, verse 46. "And it came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions." And that's the unique part. He simply didn't go into the temple and sit down and listen, which would have been altogether a part of the lifestyle of young men. But he began to ask questions. And these questions puzzled these men. "And all that heard him were astonished." And that's what a wonder is supposed to do, to create astonishment, to create, if you will, controversy, to create excitement. "They were astonished at his understanding and answers, and when they saw him, they were amazed." There's another word that his teaching or his questioning of the doctors created. "And his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. And he said unto them, How is it that you sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my father's business? And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject unto them." That is, he was a proper child. "But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart." Now notice verse 52. "And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man." That's all the details that we have of Jesus Christ. Just this one account when he was 12 years of age, and nothing else until we see him identified by John the Baptist as the Christ, the Son of the living God. Why do we not have details of his growing up? That's not a difficult question to answer at all. If we had learned his favorite food, if we had learned of his favorite color, if we had read in the scriptures of his particular and peculiar habits and other details of his growing up, these would have become so important to us that we would believe that in imitating them, we might be pleasing to God. We do not have a shred of anything he wrote, because that paper would be sacred. Wars would be fought over the remnants of the cross on which he was crucified, so we have no idea what became of it. If we knew what his favorite food was, every child would be eating it as some imitation of Christ, the Son of God. In fact, Jesus Christ is the only person, the only figure in a religion that bears the name of a person, Jesus Christ, where this is totally lost and absorbed into history. For instance, is in the Islamic religion, it's totally opposite. In studying that particular religion and all that the Muslims do, you'll find that they have split, divided, and fought one another, arguing over how Muhammad ate watermelon. For some of them said, surely he spits the seed out as he eats them. Another said, no, he surely spits them into his hand. And that was such a important act that they actually divided over whether he spit them on the ground or whether he spat them in his hand, trying to do everything that Muhammad did in order to gain favor with Allah. We don't have anything like that to do about Jesus. Not a single solitary thing that has to do with how he dressed and what he ate, what his favorite pastime was. Nothing of that nature. But we do have his miracles, his wonders, and signs. Now, when we speak of miracles, you wonder, why were these miracles recorded in the Bible? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Why are there so many of his miracles recorded? John gives us the answer to that question in John 20:31. Speaking of the miracles of Christ, but these are written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you might have life through his name. Miracles were not given just because Jesus felt sorry for people. In fact, there were some who criticized him because he did miracles in another city, but when he came to his hometown, he didn't do miracles, and they criticized him and said, you won't do for us in your hometown what you did for others in a strange town. Why is this? And Jesus went into the synagogue and picked up the scriptures and read to them out of the scriptures of how there wasn't but one widow who had the miraculous barrel. Just wasn't God's will for him to heal everyone that was sick and raise everyone that had died. He did it sparingly and for a purpose. And that was to prove that he was Jesus, that is the promised one. He was the Son of God, and his name was Jesus, and he came from Nazareth. Some of the things that he did were truly miracles. That is, there was no way that they could be attributed to some act of magic or some thing that might occur later on in time. His first miracle was in Cana at a marriage feast where he turned water to wine. Now, this might be more of a sign than a miracle, but it's called a miracle because it took the power of God and the interruption of nature. Nature and a process of grapes and other things can create wine. Jesus took water, did away with the whole process, and made wine. I've often said that if he had been a Baptist preacher, he would have taken the wine and changed it to water. Being a Baptist. Well, there are some people who do. But anyway, I've just thought of that from time to time. It was a miracle. And the people there knew it was a miracle. And it served to invite them to follow this man, to watch him as he lived in their midst, as a man who was being approved of God among them. That's why we don't have all of the other instances of his growing up, of his birthday, and what did they eat on his birth. All these things are missing because they weren't important. What's important are the miracles, the wonders, and the signs that identified him as Messiah, who identified him as the Son of God. The dead were raised again to life. That is a miracle. Not that he prayed for a dead man and then 10 days later he revived or anything of that nature. He raised dead persons to life. Lepers, which is a disease that marks its progress in the human body. The nerves in a person's fingers become dead, and then by trying to work or lift things, they can feel no pressure, and they begin to cause injury to the nail, to the finger, at the ends of the finger. And that's the first thing that begins to show, because they can exert so much pressure that they injure their fingers. And then that becomes sore, finally falling off, and then going further up the arm, and then occurring in other parts of the body. It is an obvious disease. It isn't like, well, I feel bad right here, Jesus. Please heal me. These were obvious. People knew these people had leprosy. And when he healed them, when they were cleansed, it was a miracle. And the blind had their sight restored. People knew that this person was blind. It was obvious that this person was blind. They didn't get better over a period of days or weeks, but instantly, all of the processes that give sight were reversed and restored, and immediately people saw and described what they saw. It was indeed a miracle. And then wonders. I'm trying to separate these so that I could help you and me to understand exactly what Peter meant when he said these things on the day of Pentecost. I think that his walking on the water was a wonder. That is, it created excitement. It created amazement. Stilling the waters created amazement and astonishment. His transfiguration. Peter, James, and John there were people with him on the Mount of Transfiguration. And yet, what we see happening because of it, when he was transfigured with two Old Testament saints, there was amazement and astonishment. And that's what these things were supposed to do. When devils were cast out, that was a wonder. It amazed and astonished and surprised and created controversy and conversation. The tribute money. Certainly, God's power was involved. But in order to pay taxes, they went and caught a fish and opened the fish's mouth, and there was the total amount they needed to pay their taxes. That was a wonder. It puzzled people. It caught their attention. But the signs, as I mentioned in Isaiah 7:14, the very first statement is, "Therefore the Lord himself shall give you a sign." And some of these were fluorescent. You know, the fingers that are pointing. And others were very subdued and subtle. But they were to be the signs by which people would begin to investigate the claims that Jesus made to being the Son of God, that would cause their minds to inquire. And I think one was the fig tree that was blighted. It's kind of a unique story. They were going up to Jerusalem. Jesus was hungry. He saw a fig tree with many leaves on it. But when the tree was examined, there were no fruit. There was no fruit. They went on, and because of this, Jesus cursed it. That is, he placed a curse upon it, that it would never be examined again for fruit and disappoint people. They went on to Jerusalem and the temple and came home, and then the next morning as they came to the same place, returning to Jerusalem, they saw a tree, so the scriptures tell us, that was dead from the root system up. That was a sign. That was a sign that Jesus could control all of nature. Not only the water, not only human beings and their health or well-being, but nature itself, in the trees and in the oceans and the rivers. He was the master of all of these. The virgin birth, as I've mentioned, it was for a sign. That is the prediction or prophecy of it. There was the ascension of Jesus, which was a sign that he had gone back to God the Father and that he would return in like fashion. These were indelible, flashing signs that he is risen from the dead and he's going back into the presence of his Father. The miraculous draughts of fish. Just the common, ordinary event of fishing all night and catching nothing, which I've practiced that pretty well in my life. But let the nets down on the other side, and there is a net so filled with fish that they were incapable of lifting it. And that was a sign. A common thing done extraordinarily, no doubt, and created by the power of God, and yet it caused them to think, to talk, and to consider. 5,000 fed actually attributes the reason for Jesus doing it to his compassion. When he saw the multitudes, he had compassion upon them. It's the only miracle that Jesus stopped doing. He didn't stop raising the dead. He didn't stop healing the lepers. He didn't stop opening the eyes of the blind. He didn't stop any of his other wonders and miracles. But this one thing Jesus did, do you know why? Because when he quit feeding the crowds, they quit coming. And Jesus said so. The people came in multitudes because they hoped that he would institute a year-round subsistence level of bread and fish. They really had hooked on to something tremendous. Just follow him. He'll give you something to eat continually. And that was a good deal. They misinterpreted why he did it. They saw the sign, but they didn't see the truth. In Matthew 14, or rather in John 8:59, it tells us of an occasion where Jesus was trapped in the temple, and they had rocks to stone him to death, and that he just passed through the crowd. That was a sign. How did he do that? Why didn't they see him? God clouded their vision, perhaps. The scriptures doesn't reveal to us why. It just says he passed through them to the other, to the openings and left the temple. But to his disciples, the people who saw it, who knew it, it was a sign. Jesus lived among men. He lived no monastic life. He wore no special clothing. He had no special diet. He had no special attention given to him because of his beauty. He had no special favors from God or parents, but was tempted as we are tempted, and yet without sin. Emmanuel, God with us. And it's still true today that we can read of these miracles, we can read of these wonders, and we can read of these signs. We can draw conclusions about him and why he came and how he lived among us. And we can trust him.